Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to Parkcast, Park fans. We're here every week. We're a podcast for theme park fans, and we chat about things in the theme park industry and chat to some interesting people along the way as well. I'm Bex. This is Kev.
Hi, everyone.
And this week, we are delighted to welcome someone to the podcast who has been through quite a few of our UK theme parks and attractions. So we're going to be chatting to him about all of those. He's currently the resort director at the Gulliver's Rother Valley Resort. But before that, he was at Alton Towers, and he's been through Bear Grylls with Merlin as well. Loads to talk about. Craig Seedhouse, welcome to Parkcast.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Mm-hmm. Nice to have a Midlands voice on the show as well, somewhere that I lived for a long time. So you're from is it Wolverhampton, or is that going to offend you?
Walsall, but I am born and bred. So yeah,
very close. Enough. It's close enough.
Into football today.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I have lived in that area for long enough to know there are some very strict like rivalries that I don't want to get wrong. So okay, we'll leave it there and I'll quit while I'm ahead. But yeah, like I said, you've been an attraction pro for a long time. You've seen a lot, you've experienced a lot, so I thought it'd be great to get you on the podcast and chat about everything you're doing now, but sort of your history and what you've seen, the side of the industry that you've seen. So you started off, was Alton Towers your first route into the attractions world?
Yes, absolutely. I spent 17 years at Pizza Express, in sort of branded high street restaurants.
Nice.
And fancied a change. I'd only ever really done high street restaurants and just thought, how wild and wacky would that be to join a theme park? Let's apply and see what happens. And never for one minute thought little old me from the restaurant background would end up in theme parks. And before I knew it, my boss at the time, Christoph, I'd gone through the assessment day, was offered the job. And then it was like, wow, I really have got to start at a theme park now. It seemed like a wild idea, but never thought it would come off. So, yeah, before I knew it, I was thrown really into the deep end with Merlin and Alton Towers, and really their F&B offer that was on the up. And it was my job to sort of give it some structure and give it potentially a fresh new way of thinking and a few new different directions. So, yeah, it was... It was a bit of an eye-opener, actually, going from restaurants to theme parks. It's not a standardised route many people take, I don't think.
No, I guess not. And I guess there's a lot of similarities, which is why you were sort of chosen for the job. But again, a lot of differences. You have a captive market at a theme park, whereas at a high street restaurant, you're trying to entice people in. And that's not really your job when you're in the theme park. You're just there to provide good food whilst they're already in, whilst somebody's got them in for you. But were you a theme park fan at all? Obviously, from the Midlands, Alton Towers would have been a park that you grew up with.
Yeah. I remember, going to Alton Towers as a child, going with family and sort of growing up and growing through that journey of Alton Towers, really. There was a lot of change that happened early days, and in particular Alton Towers, I remember when it was still to Swords Group, and then all the investment came when Merlin got on board. So, yeah, you do sort of grow up with Alton Towers if you're in the Midlands. It's a staple on the summer sort of calendar, if you like. So, yeah, it was, like I said, quite a big change. It's an iconic resort. It's, such a huge destination. It's globally, known and recognised. And, there was little old me just going, what do we do now? So, yeah, loved being at Alton Towers. It was a phenomenal time, and I was really excited to get my teeth into their F&B operation.
What was the biggest challenge then for you being at Alton Towers then?
I think back then, and we're talking sort of 2014, 2015 now, so, the resorts have changed a lot, but I think the biggest thing I found when I started compared to high streets was the freedom and the autonomy to actually sort of do what you wanted. In high street restaurants, you're governed so much by paperwork and structures and a little bit of red tape. And I sort of landed at Alton Towers expected to be governed and almost be told what to do. And actually, I could kind of go in and change what I wanted. And there wasn't too much red tape. There wasn't too much corporateness around changing of paperwork or changing of processes or changing of menus. If you're in a branded high street restaurant, for example, you might change the menu a couple of times a year. when I landed at Alton Towers, the menu hadn't changed for a couple of years. So one of the first things I did was, you know, try and get some specials on board, try and update some menus. And it was having that freedom in the theme park world that really, I guess, sparked the interest and sparked the imagination as to what you could do, what you could deliver, what you, you know, what you could land that you do not really get the freedom to do when you're out in the high street restaurant world.
I mean, Alton Towers, Merlin food, theme park food in general is something that we've talked about a lot on this podcast. And obviously what they have now is not the same as when you were there. We have the Aramark contract now, which is not something that you were part of. And that is widely criticised by theme park fans. When you were there, what was your ambition for the food and drink offering?
Well, I joined at a time where they just launched their own branded restaurants. So the Burger Kitchens, the Fried Chicken Company, Pizza Pastas, etc. So the year before, my predecessor had removed all the brands and launched their own, purely from a financial point of view. There's more money, obviously, and more revenue in completing the operation yourself rather than working with a partner. And it had really just launched. It was in its infancy. So I had carte blanche, really, to drive it in any way I wanted. So for me, really, there wasn't overly a target, a goal, because it was so brand new. I didn't really have figures from the previous year to compare. I didn't have upsells to compare from the year before. So it was really just to launch a really great product, make sure that it was really well delivered, really well presented, and value for money. We talk a lot about value for money at theme parks and making these days out affordable. And for me, that was really key to try and drive that side of the business forward. It was a well-established retail and F&B business, obviously, at Alton Towers, but I felt the launch of branded units, it was a challenge. But again, I think because the menus were quite similar in concept to the high street restaurants, you know, you've got all your standardised items on there that Pizza Hut were doing and that Burger King, McDonald's, etc. were doing. So I think as long as you can try and tie the menu into widely recognised sort of options, it gives consumer confidence in terms of what they then expect. So yeah, it wasn't a particularly difficult challenge. I think the big thing was the value for money piece, making sure we were comparable to the outgoing prices, and then making sure that the quality, consistency and value for money was at the right level, was at the right stage, because it's that consumer confidence that then drives repeat visits and the increased spend, etc. So, yeah, it wasn't a particularly difficult challenge, but you obviously dealing with 5, 6, 7 restaurants under your own remit, whereas on the high street, you're dealing with one. So that was a challenge to sort of get consistency across the board, I think.
I'm trying to think back when it launched, because obviously now one of the big things we talk about is the current prices. But then were you able to hit those similar prices for the outgoing? I can't remember. I've slept since then.
They were able to maintain, and now over the past few years has seen significant price rises for the whole industry, not just theme parks, but you know, it's governed by world economies now. We were able to maintain prices. What we found was one of the biggest challenges was increasing the upsells. I don't think the previous outgoing sites had a lot in terms of upsells opportunities, sides opportunities, that additional secondary spend.
Right.
So by me introducing that, there was then some direct competition potentially then in terms of that price increase. But yeah, it was easy enough to do. Like I say, it wasn't a massive challenge. The consistency was the big thing for me rather than reviewing the pricing elements.
Yeah. And did you bring in the dining plans? Was that under you then?
The dining plans was already there.
Was it?
Yeah. So we used to have these little...
Much missed. Book.
Wow, you have a good memory. You're going back a long time.
No, I'm just very old.
Dining plan is something I've put behind me because honestly, it used to cause headache after headache.
Really?
Look, it was a great offer. I don't necessarily think the general public got it. It was quite an expensive option to have the dining plan added on to the cost of a family ticket. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a big seller. And if I'm honest, it always caused problems.
Did it?
And I think it was the year after, I think 2016, the year after I joined, It actually came out because it was more hassle than it was worth, if I'm honest. Okay.
Well, interestingly, they've brought them back. They have brought them back this year, and there was quite, I wouldn't say heavy advertising. There was some advertising when I was in the park last week. They're not quite the same because you had sort of, whilst you were there, it would have been unlimited dining, and these are a bit more structured. Actually, I think far more complex for that. You get various tiers, and that allows you to go to various outlets depending on your tier. Which for me, even as someone who lives and breathes theme parks, I was reading it and I was like, hang on a minute. Yeah. I'm not sure I'm getting this. I can't work out if that's good value or not. So if you said that yours were not a great seller whilst you were there, it'd be interesting to know how these ones are doing, because on, like you say, on paper, they seem expensive. The gold tier, I think, is £90 per person.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, given the economic situation that most theme parks are in now, for me it's a strange decision. I don't necessarily believe, and look, I don't think it's something Gulliver's will ever do, because it's such a high cost. It's a strange decision to me to, when ticket prices are high, to then expect that kind of cost to be added on for a dining plan. People are very conscious now about what they spend and what they spend on their days out. You know, people are making very conscious choices, and certainly at Gulliver's, and I'm sure this is the same throughout a lot of theme parks, we've seen quite a rise in terms of the number of picnics that are coming on site, the amount of food that people are taking out with them, because they can afford the days out, but it's a secondary cost that goes with that day out now. So it's a strange decision for me. To launch a sort of all-inclusive dining plan when there are challenges. Not to mention, you know, people are trying to be a lot healthier now. People are making wise food choices in terms of their diet, their calorie intake, etc. So it's a strange one to launch a product that is not particularly healthy, which we know it's not, where you have to make a choice that's quite a high price.
And I think also if you're going for multiple days, I think dining plans work. I know when we've done our Disney trips, that kind of thing works because you're trying to spread something out across so many days, aren't you? If you're going for a one-off day, like Bex is saying, you're trying to figure out, well, if I'm here for the day, is it going to make sense to spend this amount?
How much food am I realistically going to eat in one day? Is it £90 worth? It's probably not.
You're making a conscious choice to eat more food because you've paid for it.
Yeah.
Actually, that's not really the right message for me.
Yeah.
Plus, theme parks now are very, very busy. You know, Alton Towers was always a busy theme park when I was there. Ride queues can be lengthy. We know that. You know, people are going ultimately for the rides to anything, but everything else for me becomes secondary. So I think if you're on a dining plan, you then have to make another conscious choice. Not only have I spent the money and I've got to eat that food, but do I not get in that ride queue because I've now got to go and get donuts, or I've got to go and get second drinks, or I've got another food voucher to use. So I think you're fundamentally then missing out on some of the basics of being in a theme park.
Yeah.
And it certainly adds up as well. If you add in your, you know, photo pass, getting photos, merchandise, even if you want to use fast tracks because it's busy.
Yeah.
You know, that it really does add up. Parking, like you mentioned, Craig. It really does add up, doesn't it? And I guess that's why I guess a lot of people are choosing to bring their own snacks and food with them.
Like I said, they've become expensive to run, expensive to operate.
Mm.
And the revenue is obviously important for all of them. But it's a difficult situation, I guess, for theme parks right now to be charging more money for guests to get in when arguably there's potentially business arguments to be reducing costs where possible to try and drive volume.
It's something that we talk about here, and we also have discussions as to actually whether sometimes ticket prices are too cheap when you compare them to parks in Europe. You know, I can get a day ticket to Alton Towers with a military discount for £25. Like, to me, that, I mean, it's great, but it's very cheap. If I'm going to Europa Park, I'm paying £50-60 for a day. I'm getting a very different experience at Europa Park, don't get me wrong, but chicken and egg. Did you ever consider, we talked about how, you know, theme park, I don't want to dwell too long on theme park food, but it obviously has been a big part of your life. Did you ever consider like healthy options? Because we do, again, talk about UK park food being very hot dogs, chips, burgers, you go to Europe, you don't necessarily just get that. You have alternative options like rice boxes, salads, and we don't seem to see that here. Is that driven by consumers or price or?
Personally, I think it's driven by consumers. This again, we're going back a long time, but I did actually launch a salad in one of the burger kitchens, and we did a salad option, and it just never sold, and the wastage from the products from the lines was too much to deal with, really. And we did quite a bit of research on it. We got quite a lot of KPI feedback in terms of the menus and the products, etc. And I genuinely believe it's that day out from reality. It's that day out escapism. People are in the gym 2, 3 days a week. They're eating salads 3, 4 days a week. They're being healthy. Actually, a day out at a theme park is a day out from reality. And that, for me, that means food choices as well. And I'll be honest, I've tried this at some of the other resorts I've been on. I tried it at the Adventure Farm where I was, launched some salads and some healthy options, and they just don't sell. And I think it is a conscious choice that guests are making, but it is driven by that choice they make of, do I want the hot dog today because I haven't had one for a month, and I get one today, or do I want the salad that I've been eating for the past 3, 4 days? So, yeah, I think there's various reasons, but it's that day out escapism for me that is the day out from the norm, family day out. We'll have a day off from everything we're doing, including dietary requirements. And yeah,
Well, that's why I think it's quite frustrating. I know we're talking about bringing like the packed lunches and stuff, but I'd rather not. This is the thing. I'd rather not have to spend my whole morning packing, making sandwiches, but I'm doing it because I know that just
It's
the
not an
cost.
option.
Yeah. And I think that's where
Absolutely.
the line is, isn't it, at the minute for families or when we're doing days out of theme parks. I'd love to just be able to just rock up without having a backpack that's really heavy full of stuff.
Exactly.
Go into the, into roller coaster restaurant or wherever and just and do that. But it's just
Look, the last time I went to Alton Towers, I took my son and a couple of his friends to Alton Towers. And look, we are going back probably 18 months now. I think it was around this time of year, potentially. Could have even been 2 years ago. But yeah, I actually ate in one of my old restaurants. And it was years and years, obviously, since I've been. Very different, different style, different service style. It was all self-service. There was no counters now. You can see where they're making the efficiencies and the changes. But I'll be honest, I was surprised at the prices for three of us to eat. Even 18 months ago, it was expensive versus what I'd remembered. It would have been a really, really expensive day if you're doing that, for multiple groups, for larger families, etc. And for people that have spent a lot of money on tickets, it's sometimes just not an option.
And the pizza and pasta goes up every year. Literally every single year as well. I think we used to love eating there and then it just became not possible. And it was really sad really because that was always a to go to restaurant for me personally, being in Katanga Canyon and Byron Way Mine Train, go and have that. But every year it's like, how is it, even with your Merlin discount, I think that's the other thing. Like you're adding into it, okay, well, if I get 20% off, it's still gonna work out to this. And it just becomes, it's very frustrating, but I understand why. But I think as fans and even general public probably find it a bit, oh,
I can't remember exact prices, but I think from memory, when I had pizza pasta, it was $9.95 for children and $12.95 for adults, or $14.95 for adults.
I definitely remember it being about that
We're
price.
going back a long time, but I don't know the prices now. I would imagine it's well past
It's like
twenty
in its
pounds now.
twenties, I
I
think.
think it's
It's in the
25.
20s,
It's a, I mean, on paper, it's all you can eat, so just sit there all day and you'll get your money's worth. But then, no roller coasters for you. One thing I did notice that both pizza and pasta and other outlets were doing last week, which I always wonder why theme parks in this country don't do it more, and maybe it's something you've thought about where you are now, is themed food. So themed food has never really been a huge thing, even at Alton Towers. And yet you look at Disney and that's, I mean, it must make them so much money. Why have we not caught on with that? There's a little bit at Alton Towers with Coach House Confectionery, which is brilliant, but we don't seem to lean into it very much.
No, that actually, it's interesting you said it. It's something I mentioned. And when I opened Roller Coaster Restaurant in 2016, I think that was the first time the resort had actually done a ride-themed food option. And I launched the Wicker Man Stack because it was the year of Wicker Man. And
That
it
was really
was,
spicy.
yeah,
So
that was my idea.
hot.
And it was the first time we'd done anything that was named after a ride. And I'd tried previously in Burger Kitchen to get food items named after rides, like Smiler and you know, everything else that we were doing. And it just never got across the line. Partly because we had an F&B sort of department across the resorts. So it would have meant each individual resort having a different themed sort of food-based ride, if you like. So yeah, it was the first time I managed to do it, and I was really pleased that it became the biggest seller. But then I left 2 years later, and it didn't get chance to grow. My personal view is that you know people have their favorite rides, they have their favorite attractions. There should be more food based around themed attractions, themed areas, themed rides, because I think people would buy it. It's the same with retail merchandise. You know, they buy retail merchandise based on what they like. I think they would do that with food as well, purely for the Instagram moment now, as much as anything.
100%.
And it's something that should happen more and more. I just don't know why it doesn't.
No, I remember
Yeah.
distinctly that Wicker Man stack because you like branded the buns, didn't you, with the Wicker Man logo. And it's something as simple. Ultimately, what you've got is a spicy burger, but you've branded it with Wicker
Yeah.
Man and called it Wicker Man. And then it's like, oh yeah, I'm in Alton Towers. I'm eating a Wicker Man. It just completes the experience as a
It
guest.
worked, yeah, absolutely worked.
I remember when they did the Scarefest like cocktails as well. Like around the Scarefest time at the Roller
Yeah,
Coaster
just
restaurant, you used to get the cocktails that were all themed around the scare mazes and stuff.
yeah. Well, the first year I landed, my first Scarefest, I was the one that launched the red buns,
Oh,
and I
yeah.
don't think anyone had done it before. And I remember going to my boss, I remember knocking on his door and saying, "I've got an idea. I want to do red buns for a special item." And again, it was hot, it was spicy, it was a bit of a challenge. And it was meant to be deliberately quite difficult to tame this burger. I remember saying, "I want to launch a red bun." And he went, "No, you can't do that." And I went, "Why?" And he said, "Oh, we've never done it before." I was like, "Well, that's the reason to do it." So I got Christoph on board, and we launched the red buns, and we did it as an upsell option again, just to be a bit different. And I don't remember anyone else at the time anywhere sort of doing red buns, you know, in
No.
2015. And it went really, really well. And I think then it carried on for a few years and it worked. And people have obviously now experimented with black buns and green buns and all kinds of different colours. I don't think you should ever have green food because it just doesn't look right. But yeah, you know, Burger King now are doing their own black buns and it works. So I'm not saying I created that whole trend, but I would like to think I was one of the first to do the red bun thing.
You're
Um,
a
and it worked
pioneer.
really well. It
Yes.
was so good. It created so many talking points, especially within those branded restaurants. So yeah, it was good. But again, I think people need to use food with a bit more innovation, be a bit more daring, you know, do something a bit outside the norm. And especially fans of the resorts, fans of that time of year, Scarefest, etc., you know, they love all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was a good thing to do. And yeah, quite proud of
Definitely.
that one early in my Merlin career.
And like you say, I mean, even in 2016, social media wasn't what it is today. TikTok wasn't around in 2016. Like half of my TikTok feed is people showing unbelievable looking food. So yeah, I just think we need a bit more of that. And actually, I've started to see a lot more people at Alton Towers showing the black ice creams and things like that. So it does get traction. And yeah, I'd love it if not. And I'm not just talking about Merlin. I'm talking about any theme parks in the UK did think actually we're gonna really give this a shot and theme some of our food and do something a bit different because I think it would work for them. There you go. Anyone listening, running a theme park? That's my input. So I want to move on. So you obviously you were doing the food and drink, but you ended up at Alton Towers with a bigger title than that. Were you senior commercial manager by the time you left?
Yeah, so I sort of, I guess after a couple of years in F&B, the resort changed post Smiler. The resort was a
Yeah, of
very different
course.
place. and there was a lot of changes that, that the resort and the business went through. And my role changed, and I actually moved sort of away from F&B a little bit and got into a lot more sort of park operations. So I guess when we talk about the theme park world, that's really where you cut your teeth, you know, in ops, when you start learning about the rides and inspections and safety processes, procedures, evacs, COSWAPs, ADITs, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
That's where you really start, I guess, to understand theme parks. So I spent the last 2 years of my Alton journey doing park duty management, you know, running the park day to day to day. So I split my time between sort of F&B and park ops, if you like. And I guess that was the time I enjoyed the most, because it ultimately, like I say, that's why you join a theme park. And I never thought my F&B background would lead into that. So, yeah, spent a couple of years doing that sort of multi-role, opened roller coaster restaurant in the middle, which was the single most challenging 12 months of my entire life. It was the most difficult thing I've ever done. Anyone that is connected with roller coaster restaurant will know what a challenge that first year was. It was just an incredible time, incredibly busy. We were so underprepared for what that restaurant was going to deliver. So, yeah, phenomenal time, but was sort of glad to put that behind me. And then that led into moving to Bear Grylls, because I'd got the ops background, because I'd got the commercial background as well. I sort of started to become, I guess, a more rounded operator. Moved over to Bear Grylls, which was going to be the next biggest sort of Merlin IP. I was really, really excited to move down to Bear Grylls.
But obviously, we've heard quite recently that is no more, which is sad. I remember it launching. I worked on a big campaign to help launch it when I was at the radio station in Birmingham. And like you say, there was a lot of buzz around it. And Bear Grylls was a huge character. The attraction itself had a load going on. You could do like the flying tunnel.
Yeah.
You're in like a wingsuit. You could swim with sharks. Then you could do like your zip wires. There was escape rooms. Why do you think it didn't work?
Again, I think there's an element of marketing to it. There was a sort of a widely recognised joke around Merlin that it was Merlin's best kept secret, let alone the wider public's best kept secret. There was a lot of people in Merlin that really didn't know what it was, what it encompassed, what you could do, what you could go and tick off for the day. You know, and there was, like you say, there are bucket list items that you could do all under one roof in one day that, you know, you've got to travel hundreds of miles to do. So I think there's an element of marketing. I think there's an element of a mixed message around what that resort was, what you could do, what it entailed for the day, but also location. It just really was, for me, wrong location. I get the geographic element around why we put it there. Great motorway. Accessibility, you know, you're right on the outskirts of Birmingham, you've got great road links, great rail links, etc. It is just not a destination environment. That area is purely based around shows, conferences, events. The retail elements there have not taken off. The commercial elements have not taken off in terms of restaurants, I don't think. So, it was a real shame. I think had we picked that unit up and dropped it at the side of Alton Towers and built it, you know, in one of our car parks at Alton, it would have had huge visitor numbers, because it was a phenomenal attraction. I've not known many better themed, designed, built attractions in the Merlin group than Bear Grylls. It just took your breath away. It was incredible. The minute you walked in, it was just wow. I took my kids through it. That did most attractions when they were younger. They absolutely loved it. And it's a real shame. It's a real travesty. I actually still work with one of the guys that was with me at Bear Grylls. He's with me at Gulliver's now, Matt Dixon, who is a great guy. And we still talk about Bear Grylls now with such affection. It was such a great time, but really sad ending. For what should have been something better.
Because if you haven't been to it, so basically they built it next to Birmingham Airport on the site of the NEC, which is obviously a big conference area. There's a big outlet shopping mall opposite, which hasn't really taken off. And in when you walked in, I think a lot of people imagine it as like just a bit of a warehouse or something like that, but it wasn't. It was totally themed, like you were in a jungle. And like you say, it was really, really well done. There was a zip line off the back of a Chinook helicopter. Like it was, and it was full size. It was an incredible piece of theming. But yeah, I know full well, having lived in Birmingham for 5 years, the challenges of that particular site, nowhere really seems to do well there, apart from the NEC, which has been there forever. And you have to go there for the, if you want to put on a big show, it's at the NEC. It's a real shame, and it's a shame. I've seen a lot of urban explorers and stuff doing stuff there, and you see these things that just are left to rot, and it's really sad because it, like you say, it could have been a great attraction.
Yeah, and it was incredibly expensive. I worked a lot with the projects team, became really good friends with quite a lot of the projects team that I still speak to now all the time. It was an incredibly expensive product to try and land, build, deliver. Like I say, really, it should have been more. There should have been more emphasis on trying to get that traction over the line.
Do you think the Bear Grylls IP itself didn't help? Well, we've talked about this on the podcast before, when IPs kind of come and fade, and Bear Grylls was a big character for a time, but then, you know, lesser so. He's out of the public eye. People are like, well, why do I want to go to a Bear Grylls place? Whereas if it was just the action adventure experience, it's almost more accessible.
Yeah, look, and Bear Grylls was a great guy. I met him numerous times. He was so good to talk to, so engaging. And when I was growing up, you know, you used to watch Bear Grylls doing these crazy survival shows and, you know, throwing himself all over the place with celebrities. And I do wonder whether he peaked prior to coming on board with us.
Exactly that,
whether there was an element of that potentially, you know, different people have come in and taken over in that void left a little bit by Bear. Maybe that's got an element to it. Potentially, we were slightly too late. The attraction did take a long time to build. Could we have got it over the line 12 months early? Potentially, I don't know. But yeah, it was. I wonder if we just missed the boat. We were delayed opening, so we were due to open sort of early on. I think May, June time, potentially quite early in 2019. I think it would have been, and it was delayed. So I think a lot of the marketing was then pulled. A lot of the billboards, the signage, the radio stuff was all pulled. And by the time we'd opened, it was very close to Christmas. We were sort of in that final quarter of the year. And I remember having a discussion with the team around why some of the marketing had been pulled. And it was decided to sort of really relaunch it for the Easter next year. Ready for a big full sort of year run. But by then the attraction's 6 months old. You've lost some of the fanfare. You've lost that big grand opening that it really needed. I think what really summed it up for me, it was actually in the month I was leaving. I left in August after sort of doing 14, 15 months the following year. And we hosted a food show. There was an event down the road in Solihull. And we sort of sponsored one of these food festivals. We had a stand and we had all the big archway up and everything. And there were guests that were attending that day. Bearing in mind, Bear Grylls had been open for well over 12 months. There were people approaching my team asking them what Bear Grylls Adventure was. And this is 2 or 3 miles down the road. And that will always stick with me. And that's a real shame because it should have been bigger. It should have been better. And it should have been, you know, still with us now. I think the fact that people in the surrounding towns and villages, you know, within a very short commute, didn't really understand what Bear Grylls Adventure was all about. That sticks with me for some reason.
And was it included on, you know, your Merlin annual pass? This is something else I could never remember. Could you get into Bear Grylls with your annual pass?
Again, that was a difficult one. I think when we launched, we didn't include the annual pass. Okay. It was a, you know, it's not available because some of the activities were so expensive. It was deemed that it shouldn't really be included within the annual pass. Very early on, we didn't even allow staff in with their staff tickets. And again, as the sort of business then realised what position it was in, it was open to annual pass holders. It was open then to staff tickets and Merlin staff. But again, too late. You've missed the boat.
Yeah.
It was a complicated journey inside. It was a difficult guest journey. There was lots and lots of sort of pre-waivers that had to be done. It was complex in terms of what activities you could book on, what you couldn't book on to, which journey you had to go through to get to which location.
Yeah.
That I know changed over the years of operation. That journey changed, and actually, you know, you could book on and do various different activities. You didn't have to book the assault course to go and do iFly. So I don't necessarily think we got it right when we opened, and it did have to go through change in order to be more productive. But it was a world first. No one had ever done it, and we didn't really know what the guest journey needed to be. I mean, I remember when we opened, we didn't even allow non-paying guests onto site to even view what it was.
Because of
the archery, because of the technical nature of some of the kits, some of the equipment, we didn't want people in and wandering around not having done waivers, not having access to tanks, etc. So it was almost a closed book. And when I look back now, that's the wrong message. But it was the message we were delivered in order to open. A real shame. But again, like everything, things happen for a reason. Had I not gone to Bear Grylls, had I not gone and done, you know, some of the op stuff, some more bigger areas of commercial, etc., it would not have led to bigger things. So a great time, a sad ending, but ultimately it's part of a journey, and that's the way to look at it.
And that journey has led to you to where you are now, which is Gulliver's Rother Valley, the newest Gulliver's site, shiny one. I remember speaking to someone from Gulliver's years ago before it was built, saying, look, we're going to be doing this and it's going to be awesome. And here you are. So you're the resort director of it. So does that mean you are basically in control of everything?
Sadly, yes. Yeah. We've been through some changes. We've been through some restructures and sort of rebuilt the team. But yeah, ultimately, as resort director, I still have overall responsibility for the site, for the resort, for the rides, the accommodation, and technically the zoo, because we have the UK's newest zoo on site. Just
amazing.
The zoo license. We work with a third party at Valley Wildlife. I have a great guy on site, Andy Jonas, that is just... he's a wealth of knowledge. I've never known anyone that loves animals more than this guy. He's brilliant. We have the UK's new zoo on site, which is another accolade for us to go through.
I know I've spoke to a guy who does project management for zoos and aquariums, and he always just says, like, working with animals is that extra layer of complication. It's like you build a themed attraction, that's one thing. Now you've got to consider animals' needs and feeding them and keeping them and all of that stuff. And it all gets taken very, very seriously. I know that. Like anyone who thinks that any attraction is just putting an animal in a cage, like, no, it doesn't happen like that.
No, he had a new animal delivery about a fortnight ago, a 21-foot boa constrictor. So I'm just I am glad I have all that kind of stuff, because that is not me.
I'll let you deal with that.
Yeah, I don't mind snakes, but not when they're 21 foot long.
That is crazy, isn't it? That's insane. Okay, so talk to us about Gulliver's. So obviously it's still a family owned theme park brand.
Correct, it's still in the Phillips family. So Matt Locke, many years ago, was built by Mr. Phillips and his wife, Mrs. Phillips. The story goes, and I believe this is true, that he wanted to sort of build houses on the side of the hillside in Matlock, and was denied planning permission. So he said, right, I will build houses on my own then. And he was a carpenter by trade and a sort of a designer, and he built lots of little wooden model houses on the side of the hillside. And it started making money, and it started having lots of visitors. And he added some rides onto the side of the hillside. And actually the rides started making more money then than the houses, and the theme park sort of grew from there.
Wow.
So yeah, that was 45 years ago. Still in the family now. Warrington opened after that, then Milton Keynes, and then finally us at Valley. So yeah, really, really sort of great business to be part of, growing, expanding. Family are all still connected. So Julie Dalton is the managing director that looks after the business as Mr. Phillips' daughter. Nick Phillips is still very, very heavily involved in the business, does all the builds, does all the rides, does all of the theming on sites, builds the attractions and the resorts himself. So Nick and Julie, very, very
Amazing.
heavily involved. And Mr. Phillips was actually on my site last week, having a wander around, casting his eye over what I'm trying to deliver. So yeah, it's really great to be part of a family business that cares so much about what we deliver, because you don't get that everywhere.
I guess it gives you a freedom that you don't necessarily get when you're working for a big organization like Merlin, where you have a lot of people, stakeholders that you need to go through. At least in a family organization, you can get your answer pretty quickly. Even if it's a no, you don't have to wait for the decision.
Exactly. The autonomy from a family-owned business is, it gives you a lot of freedom. It gives you a lot of flexibility. Obviously, there are design elements, rules, etc., and processes that we still go through that we're all governed by. But actually, yeah, if we want to make change, if we want to swap things around, we want to retheme, we want to build things, we want to change menus, etc. It is a very simple process. It is a phone call to my ops director. It is a phone call to Julie, and it's over the line. As long as we can make some justification in terms of why, of course, go for it, knock yourselves out. The problem at Merlin is you're governed by a lot of layers of red tape, as you need to be in a business that size. We don't necessarily have that in Gulliver. So yeah, there's lots of flexibility, and it's a great place to be part of.
I mean, when Gulliver's Kingdom and Matlock is a special place in my heart because I'm from Derby, so Matlock's not that far. We used to visit loads, so we're talking, late 80s, early 90s here. And the thing for me that always stood out was its location. I think it's such a clever. It would be impossible to do it now, building it on the side of a hill. Because I remember you had to go on the cable cars, get up to the top of the theme
Correct,
park, and then kind of make your way back down. But it was a very magical place as a 5-year-old going around Gulliver's. And I love that it's still operating now. I think it's great because we've lost theme parks over the last few decades. And the fact that Gulliver's is still going and building and expanding, I think is great. I love that it's family owned. I think it's really special in the UK that we still have family run theme parks. But going back to that challenge of how you build a brand new theme park, were you part of that process of going from it being built from scratch and how that all comes together?
No, so the site broke ground in 2019, and was due to launch in 2020. Obviously, as COVID hit, the dreaded COVID, which no one can mention now. So it was sort of slightly delayed, and they went through quite a few challenges of opening, closing. Could they open? Could they not? But I've only been with the business for just approaching 2 years. I joined in March last year, so. I took over from a guy that had moved on in the business. So yeah, I guess really I'm still finding my feet a little bit. I'm just now doing my sort of second season of our Halloween offer. Second season of Christmas. So really, the learnings from last year are now being implemented into this year in terms of what we're trying to land and develop. So yeah, I'm 2 years into my journey. So I wasn't there for the build. What I do know is it was pretty much waste ground. There was nothing there. The site in Rother Valley was just derelict. There was nothing there. So I think Sheffield Council were really, really keen to get someone on board that could build something tangible, that could, develop the site, add to the infrastructure, create jobs, etc., in the local community, which was struggling, and Gulliver's obviously has done that. So yeah, it literally has. I know this is a cliche, but it has been a roller coaster journey getting into Gulliver's and sort of, going through the last 18 months.
You must be the newest theme park in the UK.
We probably can't be far off. I can't
I
think
don't
of
I
many
can't
that have
no.
landed. I mean, obviously, we all know about the big one that's on the horizon for
Well, he's
for a
not here
period of
yet.
time, but there aren't many that have opened in our time, surely.
Yeah, and it must have been, in that sense, almost a risk to build a brand new theme park at a time where theme parks hadn't been built in the UK recently. So for the family to go, yeah, actually, we're going to start from scratch. We're going to literally break ground. Do you think they took what they'd learnt at their other parks and gone, right, we're going to basically combine all the best bits of these and make Rother Valley like our showpiece?
I would like to think so, being as I'm there. But
They knew you were
I mean, that's
coming.
yeah. I think look, when you've built three theme parks previously, and that skill and expertise is passed on through the family, through Mr. Phillips, through Nick, they obviously learn as they're going. I would like to think that Rother Valley is laid out for me in the best manner. In the best way. I think obviously you're driven by site, you're driven by geography and demographics, etc. But yeah, there's not too much I would change at Rother Valley. I like the layout, I like the design. I definitely think there are design cues from each of the resorts. Each Gulliver's still has its own Gulliver model, exactly the same as Matlock did, and I think every parent at home has got Polaroid footage of kids sat, at Gulliver's feet, and it was purely by chance. Only last week, my mum was clearing out her photos at home and handed me a picture of me and my brothers sat at Gulliver's Kingdom. I had no idea she had it,
Oh, no way.
and that's a probably a 40-year-old photo now of us sat at the feet of Gulliver, that everyone must have at home somewhere, and those design cues carry on through. So yeah, it's really nice that that happens, but. But obviously, the learnings that have gone into building three, four theme parks previously now make a difference when it comes to the new ones.
Obviously, at Gulliver's in Warrington, you've got a wooden coaster there now. Do you think that might be something that could ever come to Rother Valley? Is there room to put anything else in? I know we'll have theme park roller coaster enthusiasts who demand wooden coasters. So I'm just going to ask the question whilst I've got you.
Yeah, the Antelope at Warrington, iconic. I've been on it. It is a bone shaker. It is a yeah. It's a great attraction. And again, that roller coaster was built by Mr. Phillips and Nick Phillips.
Really?
They built it together. Yeah, so
That's
very, very,
mad.
very legit. So yeah, it's they
Crazy.
yeah they learned how to do that. Takes a lot of maintenance. Takes a lot of repairs. My projects team that are based at Rother Valley actually go and carry out a lot of sort of planned maintenance. It takes a lot of upkeep, as you can imagine. I don't know how much I can say.
You can't tease us like
Yeah,
that.
you.
Presently, so my site's about 250 acres. Currently, the theme park uses about 90 acres. So we have massive plans
Okay.
for
Wow, okay.
expansion. There is lots and lots coming.
Amazing.
We are exploring options for a wooden coaster for the future. Let's
Can I just
leave it at
say, if there is one in
that.
Wales which is looking for a new
Oh,
home.
yeah, that's true. That's a really good point.
I think Nick would like to build his own rather than take someone else's. But yeah, we've discussed a wooden coaster on site. At present, within the current boundaries of what we have, within the fenced area we have, we don't have the footprint for a wooden coaster. However, in the future, there are discussions to be had around building us, I guess, a larger scale, older age group ride that we really need at Rother Valley. A lot of our social media influencers have been through Rother Valley. They love the resort, they love the park, they love what we're doing. But some of the feedback has been it needs a bigger, single, iconic coaster to sort of draw in that slightly older crowd. So, yeah, let's see what the next few years deliver.
Well, that's
Amazing.
exciting, isn't it?
Amazing.
Actually, I think it's really interesting from being at Towers last week, the amount of people who I heard saying Wicker Man's the best ride in the park. Which was always a massive worry, I know, for them building it, was how are the public going to receive a wooden coaster? And I just think Wicker Man has changed the game for the public's perception of modern wooden roller coasters. I think it's done it. I think it's absolutely made people realize they can be super thrilling, especially at night. I mean, the queue for that thing last week was longer than anything else in the park, longer than Smiler, longer than 30, longer than Nemesis. Like, that was the coaster everyone wanted to go on. And it absolutely does that job of bridging your family market into a slightly more thrill-seeking market. And I think, you know, you guys have got the expertise. You've built one already. So you've worked with one. You've worked with Wicker Man Alton Towers. So yeah. I think it would be absolutely perfect for you guys. Yeah.
I must admit, that going back to Alton, my favourite roller coaster was Wicker Man. I was part duty manager the day we opened in 2016 with Wicker Man. And I remember that the queues, people running down Main Street to get to Wicker Man to be first on. You know, iconic moment when Wicker Man opened. One of my favourites. That and Nemesis for me are my two favourites. I think Nemesis always holds a special place. But yeah, love Wicker Man, and I would love us to have our own wooden coaster at Gullivers Valley and Match Warrington. It would be great for us to have.
Absolutely. I'm going to manifest that for you.
That'd be great. Another wooden coaster, definitely.
Yeah.
I tell you what, my first ever roller coaster was the log roller coaster at Gulliver's Kingdom, thinking back.
Yeah.
So, you know, that at the time looked massive. But now when I look back, doesn't look very impressive. But at the time, it was like, whoa. But I think that's what you need as a kid when you go to these smaller family parks, is that kind of like that kind of roller coaster that you see and go on for the first time, be like, whoa.
You know, absolutely. So that sparked your interest, and look where you've ended up now. You know, it's
exactly
the bright lights of Parkcast.
Exactly.
Obviously, that you've talked about that as a future expansion. That suggests to me like times are good, things are going well, that you're considering, you know, more investment. We've heard, you know, a lot of theme parks are finding things tough in the current climate. How are you doing? If I can ask that, I mean, you have a very specific market, and how are you finding it?
I think one thing that Gullivers do really well, we cater to a lot of different needs. So if you take Rother Valley, for example, we've gone through quite a bit of change. We've diversified in terms of what we do. So we have a huge schools educational program where our residential stays pretty much operate throughout the year. So we put well over 120 schools through our resort every single year, just purely on residentials, anything from one day to 5 days. So that is a really big market for us. We've just opened a sort of new learning hub, if you like, on the resort called Skill Street. Skill Street is a totally unique world first venture in terms of offering students career advice through learning. So it's very much based sort of on education, but it's a place where employers can actually sort of teach school children, school leavers about life skills, about career choices, and about what their future holds for them. So I think we're not just a theme park. We are trying to become, I guess, something for the community as well. So we have the ability to be diverse. We have the ability to, you know, if we want a zoo, we'll drop a zoo in. If we want to do an education hub, we'll drop an education hub in. So yeah, we've done lots and lots over the past few years to try and bridge gaps in the market where theme parks are traditionally struggling and visitor number is down. We can now look at different areas to try and top up the volumes and the revenue. So
yeah, that's good.
I think on the whole, Gulliver's is holding its own. You know, we are not after the thrill seeker market.
Yeah.
We're also not after the very young, very, very young children's market.
Yeah.
We bridge that gap that covers the family day out.
Yeah.
If we do need to do sort of younger children's days, Rother Valley will do a tots day. So 5 days a week we offer tots, where the theme park is not open, but actually you can come and use all the other facilities.
Yeah.
So we're always trying to look at ways of A, keeping the business going and making sure that we're open. I sometimes think the worst thing for a theme park is open, close, open, close, open, close. Actually, if we can stay consistent, we can stay open, run at reduced offers, keep maintaining that constant openability. It just means that everything is ticking over.
Mm-hmm.
So in a nutshell, Gulliver's on the whole has held its own this year. While it's not a record year for anyone out there, I'm pretty sure. You know, I don't think there are too many concerns in how we operate and what the long-term plans are. So, Yeah, it's a stable environment. It's been relatively consistent this year. Numbers, like I say, are holding their own versus previous years, which is great to be because Gulliver's has grown year on year on year on year when I look back through previous years. So, look, you can't keep operating at record years forever. Eventually, every theme park has to flatten out. So it may as well happen in a year where the economic crisis is sort of biting hard for a lot of people. And we push on to next year. So it's great to be part of, like I say, we keep coming back to how good it is to be at Gulliver's, and I really do enjoy my time there. But yeah, there are no plans for us to be making cuts, let's put it like that. We're looking for the
It's
future, we're
really
looking
good.
for development.
It's really positive to hear. And obviously, you're the second family park that we've had on the podcast. We had Lawrence from Portons on, who are also doing amazingly. And maybe it's no coincidence that the parks that are run by families who really throw all their love and care and investment back into it are thriving. And also, you both are really clear about what your objectives are, where you're going, what your park is, who it's for. You're really clear about that. And that seems to work. And I think, there's a lot of park operators who would take a steady year over what they've had this year. So I think they'll be
Yeah,
looking
it's
on.
weird, Sharon. When you look at some of the really long-standing businesses that have gone under this year, not just in theme parks, but the wider areas, commercial areas,
Well, your
big
food
big
and drink
businesses.
you were talking about, high street food and drink retailers, massive name, Pizza Hut a few days ago saying that's it, we're closing 70 stores. It's not easy for anyone. So I think if you can say, actually, we're doing as well as we did last year, then that is not a bad place to be at all.
Absolutely.
One thing that you don't seem to go in for is we talked about the use of IPs and Bear Grylls. Gullivers don't use IPs. You have your own sort of characters, and is that intentional? Do you think that will ever change?
We do use some IPs. So in terms of characters, we sort of have Bing and Flop and Clangers, and we've done Peppa Pig in the past. Again, I think I'm quite young into my journey with Gullivers, but I think there has been a little bit of a shift away from that, more towards our own characters, towards Gin and Gully, towards Glitter Drop, towards the characters that have become household names for Gullivers, not just within animation world or etc. So yeah, they carry significant cost to carry an IP. I think if you can create your own and carry your own and make those become household names, then actually you're better off. We have a range of merchandise that follows our characters. We have all of our entertainment shows built around our characters. So it makes sense that we, in my mind, sort of try and promote our own internal in-house characters and do move away from the IPs. The fact that we're strong enough to carry our own business without use of big IPs, I think, is testament to what we deliver. Having discussed Bear Grylls, that IP came at significant cost, astronomical cost to carry that. And actually, did it deliver? We spoke earlier about whether that brand as an IP was strong enough to carry that attraction. My view was not. So does adding a Peppa Pig character, drive our numbers forward? Potentially not, and then you've not had to outlay that cost. So yeah, I'm a big fan of our own internal characters. We have some great costumes made. We have some great outfits that really work wonders. So yeah, I'm quite happy where we are
'Cause
from our characters.
if you look at Merlin at the minute, they are really banking on these future IPs to push them forward, aren't they? Really, if you look at, we've got Bluey Coaster opening next year, we've got Paw Patrol, Minecraft. They're really banking on these IPs to push that business forward, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. We have Bluey appear at our resorts twice a year. So through Rainbow, through the costume characters, we do quite a lot of themed weekends throughout the year. And Bluey has been on three or four times in my time. What I have seen is the demand for Bluey at my resort, and this is only for me, but it has dropped. It's not as popular as it was. Is that because Bluey as a character, is he reaching the sort of the end of how popular that character is potentially? I don't know, but yeah, I personally would like to see more use of our characters. Again, could the Bluey coaster be too late? I don't know. Is that another bear potentially? Yeah, they are banking on a lot of IP and a lot of investment in that field. Only time will tell, I guess.
Yeah, and it is what we talk about. If like, IPs can be amazing, Lawrence from Portland said Peppa Pig literally turned the park around for them. But he himself admits they took a lucky gamble on it, and the gamble paid off. But they are a gamble, and if you hit them at the wrong time, they can actually just, like you say, be an expensive mistake. So, I think you're right. If you can invest in your own, we've talked about on here as well how much we love seeing like unique, creative characters and concepts and themes. Yeah. I mean, we're theme park nerds, so of course we love that stuff. Yeah. But the public love it as well.
And even when I was a kid, and we went to Gulliver's Kingdom. We didn't go because there was an IP, you know, because it was a magical for a child's eyes going into that part. It was really magical.
Yeah.
You didn't need an IP as such to draw you in. So that's always been my argument anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, actually, our Gully Mouse, very, very, very loosely, is actually designed on Mickey Mouse. So I think.
Oh, don't say that. Disney will be on the phone.
Julie, when Julie was a very young girl, she went to Disney herself as a family, and Matlock was sort of being built, and she loved Mickey Mouse. Of course, who doesn't love Mickey Mouse when you go to Disney? She was in a very lucky position where she was able to come home and design her own character for her father's theme park. You know, not everyone gets to do that, so you know, that's built cool. by yourself, designed by yourself, you know, with some inspiration, but yeah, you know, it's that has carried on for 45 years of Gulliver, so it's great to have that sort of consistency and longevity through the brand.
Well, just to come back to full circle then, because we started off with your food and beverage career, so food and beverage at Gulliver's. Do you have an input into that? Is that something you still take a keen eye on? You're like, we've got to get this right.
Yeah. We have a hospitality director that is very hands-on. We do a lot of work together in terms of menu design, menu development, schools menus. Obviously, we've talked about the schools program, but that schools menu is so specific, dietary requirements, allergens, needs of children. You know, when you put in 7,000 or 8,000 kids through a school program, you know, the menus have got to be right. So work really closely with the F&B team. We have quite a lot of freedom, if you like, to create menus ourselves. So one of the big events that Gulliver's Valley is launching actually on the 8th of November is Land of Lights. So we're doing our very own Land of Lights trail. We've been able to put together all the menus for that, do all the specials, do all the bar programs. So, yeah, we have full autonomy. And again, that will go through the correct sign-off procedures. But we have that ability to go, this is what we want to sell. This is what we're going to do. Let's roll with it. It's easy enough to do that, to make the change to the menus, to make the change to what we want to sell, to service journeys, to products, key lines. It does come full circle. You know, you still have that ability to go back to your roots and start looking at pizza ranges, which is where I'm
a
Gulliver's Mouse themed pizza.
Well, you know,
or you could do like the Mickey pizzas with the little.
Right, now we've got a real IP problem, haven't we?
I know, right.
Yeah, don't do that. Just something similar. I'm sure you get your creative juices flowing with that. I'm sure it'll get you somewhere. Amazing. Well, look, I'm going to have to come up and visit you at some point. You're not a million miles away from me, straight up the A1. So I need to do that. I'm really excited to see what you do in the future. And the fact that you've got all this space for expansion and stuff is, I think, very exciting for us as theme park fans. We always like to hear of a theme park that has space and the ambition to expand. We will be keeping a very close eye on that. Before you go, though, we've got one last question for you.
Just Gotta Ride It.
This is Just Gotta Ride It. It's the part of the podcast where we ask our guest, which roller coaster in the whole world would you save if every other was going to get destroyed? Which is the one that you're going to keep for us all to ride? And it can be for any reason at all. It doesn't have to be the biggest, the fastest. It could just be something that's special to you. But putting you on the spot, which one are you going to save?
Wow. You should have pre-warned me on this, Bec. Honestly, I think for my memories at Alton Towers, it would have to be Wicker Man.
Nice.
Partly because I remember with such a clear memory the day of opening, and I mean there were hundreds, probably thousands of guests waiting at the gates at Alton Towers for the gates to go up, for admissions to go up. Park duty manager called clear on the radio, resort open. And that there literally was hundreds of people running down Main Street. And that will stay with me for a long time. Those are the moments that kind of give you goosebumps because you realise the importance of what you're trying to deliver.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And that was the first day where I was PDM for the day, where I actually got to open a new ride for myself and I was in charge for the day. So, yeah, it would be Wicker Man. It would be a close call. Yeah, I think it's an iconic ride in a really iconic resort, and a sort of a big day for me that I'll always remember.
I don't think you could have given a better reason than that. You couldn't have justified that any better. I'm like, it's got to be Wicker Man. I can't even imagine the butterflies that you must get when you're standing facing the guests, facing you, and those gates open, and everyone's just like,
crazy.
Yeah, special moments.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a runner. I think Kev's a runner. I reckon you'd have been a runner.
No. When I was like 13, 14 years old, maybe.
He's too busy with his picnic backpack now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's weighing me down. There's no way I'm running.
Yeah.
To be fair, I was very lucky and I got to ride Wicker Man in that week when it had its soft opening.
Yeah.
So I didn't run. I managed to go around three times, so, but we'll, you know.
good.
But, yes.
Amazing. Craig, it's been absolutely fantastic having you. I feel like there's so much more we could have chatted to you about, and we'll definitely have to catch up again in the future.
Absolutely. You let me know when you're free, and we'll get you up to Valley for the day. Come and have a wander around.
Oh, look at that. Hashtag ad. Amazing.
It'd be great to visit, yeah.
So much for coming on podcast. If you've enjoyed today's episode, and if not, why not? But if you have, make sure you've subscribed, because then you're never going to miss another episode. And if you would like to leave us a review, you can do that here as well. For now, though, we've been podcast.
Podcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.